How often do we hear today that religion is the greatest source of conflict and violence in the world? It is understandable that people feel that way, but is it true? In his study, Body Count, Naveed Sheikh, a scholar at the University of Louisville, has compiled lists of major political violence across world history. There he finds that the largest number of deaths were lost in conflicts to protect and expand the interests and borders of nation states, emerging nations, and colonial or imperial powers. In Europe in World War I and World War II, in the Japanese occupation of China, in imperial and communist China and Russia to destroy internal political opposition, by the Mongols in their imperial expansion, and even in American colonialism and expansion whereby millions of natives were killed. In all of these cases, except in the destruction of American indigenous communities, religious differences were a minor or irrelevant factor. And even in the case of Native Americans, religious prejudice could hardly be distinguished from racial prejudice. This does not mean, however, that religious people can rest easily. Our faiths have been and are used to justify violence and intolerance. Among many examples we can give, I am plagued by the knowledge that thousands of innocent people died in this country in the terrorist attacks of September 11th by men who justified their actions in the name of my religion. In those cases where religious identity is conflated with ethnic, tribal, or national identity, conflicts between different groups seem more enduring. We think of the tragic clashes between Catholics and Protestants in Ireland, the genocidal campaign of Serbian Christians against Bosnian Muslims, and the enduring conflict between Israeli Jews and Palestinian Muslims and Christians. Yet in these and in other conflicts, peacemakers motivated by religious faith have contributed to reconciliation and alleviated the suffering of many people. The Grand Mufti of Bosnia, himself a victim of the four-year siege of Sarajevo, and a man who had to conduct hundreds of funeral prayers for innocent Muslims massacred at Srebrenica in the name of Serbian Christianity, led his people towards reconciliation. The orphans of Srebrenica were taught to pray, "O God, teach us that tolerance is the highest degree of power, and the desire for revenge the first sign of weakness. O God, if we sin against people, give us the strength of apology. And if the people sin against us, give us the strength of forgiveness." Martin Luther King Jr., Mahatma Gandhi, the Dalai Lama, Archbishop Desmond Tutu, each one an individual of faith who has drawn upon the discourse of peace, justice, and human dignity in their respective traditions to create powerful, positive movements. As a Muslim, I know that the religion of Islam is mostly a positive force for peace among my community. The majority of the world's Muslims live in poverty, the result in many cases of the legacy of European colonialism and subsequent dictatorship. Yet ordinary Muslims across the world draw upon their faith to continue to live ethical lives, to show gratitude towards God in the most dire of circumstances, and to show charity and hospitality towards others, even if their own means are limited. Americans who travel to the Middle East and other regions where there are majority Muslim cultures have experienced this hospitality and kindness. Since September 11th, however, the steady news of suicide bombings and terrorist attacks committed by militant Muslims has resulted in another impression, that Islam promotes violence and that Muslims are in some kind of essential conflict with the West or even with Christianity. It is the nature of the news to focus on the most dramatic, bizarre, and disturbing events of the day. Yet when most Americans do not know Muslims personally or have little knowledge about Islam, the result of these persistent, violent images leaves a distorted impression. Certainly, it has been appropriate for Muslims to take more responsibility for our faith, to ensure that it is not hijacked to harm others. It is not appropriate, however, for ordinary Muslims to have their own faith defined by the extremists. This is why in 2006, when Pope Benedict XVI delivered a speech in Regensburg, Germany, in which it seemed that he suggested that an innate violent and tendency and anti-rationality was in Islam, Muslims were deeply hurt. Not only was it upsetting to have such a great spiritual leader misunderstand our religion, but many Muslim leaders were concerned that this speech would contribute to further discriminatory and intolerant actions towards Muslims in Europe, with the result that Muslims would feel further alienated from civic life, a feeling that could contribute to mistrust and even hatred. In what I can only perceive as a divinely inspired act of reconciliation, a group of prominent Muslim scholars gathered to write an open letter to the Pope and to Christians of the world to break this cycle of provocation, alienation, and division. In October 2007, 138 of the most prominent scholars and leaders from across the world, Muslims from Nigeria to Indonesia, issued an open letter entitled A Common Word. And it begins with this statement: Muslims and Christians together make up well over half of the world's population. Without peace and justice between these two religious communities, there could be no meaningful peace in the world. The future of the world depends on peace between Muslims and Christians. The basis for this peace and understanding already exists. It is part of the very foundational principles of both faiths: love of the one God and love of neighbor. These principles are found over and over again in the sacred texts of Islam and Christianity. The unity of God, the necessity of love for Him, the necessity of love of neighbor is thus a common ground between Islam and Christianity. The response to the common word has been extraordinary. Hundreds of Christian religious leaders, including American denominations, responded positively and sensitively with their own letters. Over time, more and more Muslim and Christian leaders joined in, and Jewish leaders were also invited to comment and participate in the discussions. Major conferences exploring the implications of the two commands of love and God and neighbor were held across the world. But most importantly, perhaps from my perspective, has been the response of ordinary believers who seem relieved to have an authoritative document permitting them to continue what they already wanted to do: to contribute to the common good with people of other faiths. It is religious ideology that forms a barrier to this intuitive and compassionate impulse for cooperation on the part of ordinary believers. It is thus the responsibility of religious leaders to remove such ideological barriers. There are those who are afraid of interfaith work, but we have to accept that there is a divine command that there be multiple religions in the world. The Quran says, "We have assigned a law and a path to each of you. If God had so willed, He would have made you one community, but He wanted to test you through that which He has given you. So compete in good works. You will all return to God, and He will make clear to you the matters about which you differed." There is so much work to be done in the world today. As religious people, as Professor Timothy Winter of Cambridge University said, we are called to prove to the world that we are a force for good. The modern crisis of faith is all too often triggered by a sense that religion yields the bitter fruit of enmity and conflict. Our most urgent task then, as we seek to recover our place as defenders of human dignity and mutual respect, is to show in practice, and not only in words, that we can cooperate together for the common good. When we cooperate together in good works, everyone will benefit.